Hello and welcome to Fix It, the podcast by The Fix Media, where we unpack media insight and take you behind the scenes of editorial decision, strategy, and innovation in the industry. I'm Orsi, and I will be your host today. Before we dive in, subscribe, follow, and if you like what you hear, support us at thefix.media. Welcome Alexander Manasiev, international media consultant and journalist from North Macedonia. We're diving into the trends on everyone's radar, multi-platform journalism. Different platforms need different approaches. And if you want to reach your audience, you better be ready. Let's get started. Hi Alexander, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm excellent. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today at Fixed.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my experience.
The first time we met, it was when you were holding this training on multi-platform journalism. And I know as a journalist, I was struggling with it a lot, especially because I don't like, for example, to do videos. What do you think? What makes multi-platform journalism so effective in today's media landscape?
So we are witnessing every day basically how technology is constantly changing journalism. Not just how we tell stories, but how the audiences discover, consume, and interact with the stories. We are living in this fast-changing media environment where multi-platform journalism has become essential, basically, because it allows you to meet people actually where they are. So audiences today are fragmented across multiple channels, across Instagram, YouTube, podcasts, each with its own logic and expectations. To get to to the point of your question, I think that the strength of multi-platform journalism basically is because it amplifies visibility and engagement. It's not just copy-pasting the same piece across channels, as many traditional media were doing for a long time. As you already said, you struggled yourself. Well, it's about adapting the story for each format. So a single investigative story or human-centered story could live as a long-form article, could live as a 60 seconds vertical video, a carousel with key points, for example, on Instagram, or it could be a podcast interview that goes deeper into the context of the story. So this multi-platform approach also helps build trust. When journalism becomes more transparent and more interactive, like, for example, answering audience questions on stories, it humanizes our newsroom, our work, and creates a deeper connection between the audience and us as content creators, as media workers. That kind of two-way engagement is something that the younger audience expect. Also, I think that multi-platform journalism makes media more resilient. This is really important in today's media context because platforms change all the time. So if a newsroom is too dependent on one platform, they are more at risk. But a well-planned multi-platform strategy diversifies this audience base and strengthens sustainability. So this was recognized by the global media 10 years ago. So they have embraced this mindset really fast, and they started tailoring content for different platforms. And the key points here is how to change the mindset of the local or regional media here in the region that we work. And they should change more faster and more smarter and adapt to the new media reality.
Isn't it a bit overwhelming? Because now I can see that it's not enough if someone is a journalist, but we also have to be great content creators to create different content for different platforms. And at this point, we have many, many platforms. Do you think that it can be overwhelming for a media organization to keep an eye on every platform? Or this is the cost of being seen?
At first, it might look overwhelming because, you know, when I started journalism 20 years ago, I was only a journalist. I started my journalism work in a print media. Once it was the biggest selling newspaper in my country. So I started basically as a journalist. I didn't care about photos and anything, but things changed. Technology changed. Digitalization of the whole media landscape started, and we needed to adapt. So in the context of the media that I worked, they didn't change. They changed after, let's say, 5 to 10 years, and they lost a lot of the audience. So it was overwhelming for them at that time, but the process was very slow. Now the process is faster. So the smartphones, the social media, and now the AI technology is changing media landscape very more faster. So we have to adapt to the changes, or we are not going to become, or we are going to extinct as a media company. So it might look overwhelming, but we have to understand that today it's not just about creating stories, but you should be able to consider other things, to think of multimedia strategies, to think of different platforms, different strategies for different platforms. So you have to know your audience better than before. So to get back, when I started journalism, I thought only on the text. Now I think not just of the text, I think of the whole visual experience, of the whole experience of the audience. When they come to my story, I need to give them the whole experience. I need to give them multimedia, I need to give them videos, I need to give them interactive stuff, etc., etc. So we need to change, we need to adapt, and this adaptation has to be done a bit faster. It might look, again, as you already said, it might look overwhelming for somebody, but it's the harsh reality that we live in.
You mentioned that the news organization you work for, they were a bit slow on going into these changes. And since you are holding trainings on multi-platform journalism as well, so I suppose that you meet many, many newsrooms and journalists. What do you think? What are the most common mistakes that journalists, editors, or even concrete newsrooms are making when they are trying to move toward multi-platform journalism?
So the biggest mistake is what I mentioned before with the news media outlet that I started working. Now I should mention that it's not existing. So it disappeared over time. So the biggest mistake is to avoid the reality and do nothing and disappear over time or become irrelevant over time. But if you are trying to work on multiple platforms today, I would say that one of the biggest common mistakes is journalists and editors make is thinking they can just copy and paste the same story on each platform without changing anything. I worked in a TV station for 2 years that was doing this, that had the same strategy. So the news pieces that we were doing on the TV, they just copy-pasted everything on the website and from the website on social media platforms, and they were not doing this wasn't the right strategy. What works well on website won't always work on Instagram or TikTok. For example, a long headline or a block of text might make sense on the web, but it is too much for a social media post where people scroll quickly and have a shorter attention span. Another mistake is not understanding the language of each platform. So a YouTube audience might want more depth and background, while Instagram users, for example, want something more visual and easy to follow. If you don't adjust the tone, the format, the story might not connect with the people, with the audience. So also some newsrooms forget to consider the audience mindset. For example, someone listening to a podcast while commuting is in a different mood than someone casually scrolling on their Instagram or TikTok feed before going to bed. So repurposing, we have to understand that repurposing is a story isn't just about making a video shorter or reshaping it, resizing it. It's about rethinking how the story will connect with different people in different situations. In here, I would mention TikTok as a great example, as an emerging platform where this, what I talk about, is matters a lot. According to the Digital News Report, Reuters Digital News Report 2025, TikTok is becoming a space, increasing space for news consumption, especially among younger audiences. Going back, Washington Post was one of the pioneers here. They didn't just post their usual content from Washington Post, from the website, from the print edition on TikTok. They embraced the platform's unique video style and even adjusted their branding here. So TikTok is the only place where Washington Post says, we are a newspaper. This is because much of the audience here, there, on TikTok has never read a traditional newspaper before. So they are younger than when the print was a huge thing in the media business. This shows how important it is to tailor not just the content, but also how you present your identity, your brand identity, based on the platform and its audience. So at the end, finally, another common pitfall is trying to be everywhere at once without a clear plan. So it's better to focus on a few platforms and do them good than to post everything with no real strategy or understanding on how it works.
But it also requires then a big editorial focus as well, right? Or is it the journalist who should focus to how to create these multi-platform journalists, or it should be like a decision made together?
It's a decision that they need to make together, of course. It depends. It depends really on how big is your media. I work with big media companies where you have a clear hierarchy or decision making. But I also work with one person or two person media outlets that the decision process is much faster. So sometimes these small media companies, especially local or regional media companies, adapt much faster to the new reality than the big media companies. I worked in a big media company before, and the decision making was really, really slow. So the changes were slow. But if the changes outside that affect how journalism works, for example, now with the AI technology and things happening really fast from day to day, if you are a big media company that needs to adapt fast, it's really, really difficult to adapt if the decision process is very slow. So I would say that this needs to be done strategically, like a decision inside of the media, and everybody to understand that this is the path that we are going, not just the journalists to do the work how they think it should be done, without the help of the editors, without the help of the managers.
You mentioned that it's also a little bit of a pitfall if people are trying to focus on different platforms or like all the platforms at once. Are there any platforms that you would recommend to focus on? Because I think TikTok is a platform like this because TikTok is huge at the moment. Or are there any emerging platforms that you would say it's very exciting?
I would say that every platform, just imagine one of the first platforms that we started producing especially for was Facebook. It was huge 10 years ago even. It was huge, but it wasn't that video-oriented platform at that time. So the strategy of the media companies, especially the media companies that I worked for, was basically to post the content that we produced for something else, for the television, for example, or for the newspaper, into this newly emerged platform at that time, Facebook. So, but 2017, 2018, things changed a lot. Facebook started to promote more video content. So media companies needed a fast change into this new reality. Then Instagram came with different sizes of videos, etc. And when TikTok emerged, it changed the whole game. When speaking about the social media platforms, it changes the game because 9x16 videos, short videos, become predominant. So the other platforms like Instagram and YouTube changed their strategy, but also the media companies, those who adapt fast to the changes, changed their, content creation and started producing more 9x16 videos. In context of Western Balkan region, let's say media outlets, I would say that platforms like TikTok, especially TikTok, but I would say also Instagram, are underused. So this is a missed opportunity for them, I would say. It's a missed opportunity because they are free platforms. And if you embrace the way how other media companies create content for these platforms and just adapted to your style and to your editorial guidelines, it can be a really good chance for you as a media company to reach new audiences. So I would say, don't think so much of newly emerged platforms. You have to know your audience. For example, in each country, you have different audiences spread across multiple platforms. So Facebook in many countries in the region is declining the numbers of people who are on Facebook. Instagram, it's here and there, but TikTok is an emerging platform and still in the rise. So of course, a newly established platform after several years will mean that you have to see whether the audience shifted to that platform and then to decide whether you are going to create content for that platform.
Like in the episode, sounds like we're a great match and we couldn't be happier. If you'd like to strengthen our bond, support us by donating or joining our membership program. That's it. No more interruptions. Back to the episode.
Let's talk now about something more positive, because we already talked about what are the pitfalls, what are the main mistakes. But now let's focus on what are the best practices, or like what you see as a good practice when people are adapting single stories across different platforms.
So this is a question that many people ask me, whether I'm a mentor or a trainer in multi-platform journalism. And I would say that there isn't a single solution. There isn't a single recipe for this. It depends on the media, on the audience of that media, the media context, etc., etc. So if you're a national media, it should be a different strategy. If you're a regional media, it should be a different strategy. If you're a local media, it should be a different strategy. If you're a media with a working where they work like 50 people, it should be a different strategy. If you're a one-person, two-person media company, it should be a different strategy. But let's say that the key... there are, of course, some best practices, and the key to adapting a single story, for example, across multiple platforms is planning from the start with each platform in mind, with each platform's strengths and weaknesses and audience in mind. First, you have to keep a constant visual and editorial identity across all platforms, because this builds a recognition and trust. For Instagram and TikTok, for example, you should focus on short, eye-catching videos or pictures, carousels that grab the attention quickly, because we said that the attention span on these platforms is lower. People scroll fast, so your content needs to be easy to understand and share. So in the first 5 to 8 seconds, let's say, you have to grab the attention, show every story has to have a hook inside of it. So on the other hand, YouTube, if your predominant platform is YouTube, for example, YouTube is different. It's better for longer videos because the audience there expects longer videos. They go on YouTube and watch videos with the sound on, with everything. And on Instagram or TikTok, you can easily see the stories without sound, so you need captions to understand the whole message. So on YouTube, you can explain the story in more details, post longer interviews, or add more background. This is a place for explanatory videos, animations, and stuff like that. If you are a media that works with newsletters, you can write a clear summary with the main points and links to all of the content that you created basically for that story. This way, people can choose how they want to learn more inside of that story. And the most important thing is that the story, to see the story as a whole package. If it's a single story, let's say you're doing an investigation that took you 1 week, 2 weeks, or even a month to work on. So you have to see the whole story as a whole package and pre-plan, not to do after you publish the story. So each platform has its own job, some to catch interest fast, like Instagram and TikTok, others to give more information, like YouTube or the website, and all the pieces should work together smoothly. So this is also how you make your story last longer and reach more people over time. I say to people, when they have an investigation that they worked on for months, it's a pity when you see the story was read by 1,000 people and the story's life only for, let's say, a few days or 1 week, thinking, if you are pre-planning the whole story, if you are doing a multimedia story and you have a multi-platform strategy where you create different pieces of content that are connected with the same story, you can prolong the life of that story by promoting, let's say, today I'm promoting the TikTok video and I'm grabbing the attention of the audience from TikTok to my main channel, and that's the website or the YouTube channel or something like that. So it's not just about grabbing the attention of the audience, but also to prolong the life of the story. We know that there are stories that are done in this way that are alive even today. For example, Snowfall story of the New York Times, it was published, I think, 2012. So it's like 12, 13 years and still alive. People go and revisit the website because it was packed in that way that resonates and tells the story in a completely different way, which was relevant at the time when the story was published.
So when journalists are now covering different stories or they are conducting some investigation, they should already think ahead. So not just collecting materials and, let's say, write an article, but like really collecting materials and think ahead that how they can translate this story for different platforms.
My strategy would be, if you are doing, for example, if you are doing a day-to-day reporting, everyday reporting, you have to have like a strategy inside the newsroom. How are you presenting these stories and how you're packaging this, repackaging these stories for different platforms. This strategy that I was talking previously was more into stories that consume more time. So if you are doing an in-depth analysis, investigative stories, the story that will take you more than 1 week to do it, it's better to pre-plan, to make a strategy of the minimum and the maximum of the story, but also of the minimum and maximum of the content that you want to produce. You have to pre-plan whether it's going to be a long video format story, whether it's going to be a multimedia story based on the website. Are there any interactive elements inside the story, etc., etc.? This would help you not just tell the story and clear the story of unnecessary elements. For example, if you have a lot of numbers inside the story, you can put them in interactive infographics where people will click on the interactive infographics and basically learn the numbers and interact with the numbers by themselves. And this way, you clear the whole story with the numbers. You mention maybe the main numbers inside the story, but you are the long form story should be cleared of this. So this pre-planning is for everything, even for how you present your story on different platforms. So if your strategy is to do something on TikTok, for example, you have to have a pre-plan of how I'm going to present this story of TikTok. And to go into the mindset of the people on TikTok, if it's a difficult subject, I don't know, about producing electricity, how the electricity is produced in some country. For example, in my country, the 80% of the electricity is produced by using coal. So for TikTok, you can make a simple video of maybe how this electricity is produced, like a 60-second video, what is coal, what is lignite, etc., etc. So a simplification of the whole story, but it should serve as a hook for the audience that want to learn more, go into depth and visit maybe the website or the YouTube channel where the main story is.
Do you think that there are some topics or themes that are not working well on different platforms, or every story can be turned into a multi-platform story?
Well, I don't really think that there are topics that are too difficult for a multi-platform approach. On the contrary, I think that this multi-platform storytelling, this multi-platform approach can actually help make complex or serious subjects more interesting and more engaging and easier to understand for different audiences on different platforms. For example, topics like environmental issues, people's rights, election, can reach more people when adapted well on multiple platforms. For example, you might create a long-form video explaining the importance of upcoming elections, going into details, into numbers, with facts and analysis of the whole, let's say, elections, upcoming elections. And this will have like a strong audience on different platforms, on web, on YouTube. But then on TikTok, for example, you can make a short, simple video showing the people there how to vote, on who has the right to vote, or what is a census. So simple videos explained in 60 to 90 seconds, let's say. Something quick and easy that connects with younger audiences. This way, the multi-platform approach breaks down something difficult, sometimes difficult topics, into small pieces that fit together, and they fit the way different people want to learn on different platforms. So I think that the multi-platform approach is a powerful way to bring attention to important issues that might otherwise be ignored or seem too complicated for some of the audience.
We already had a couple of examples on news organization doing quite well in multi-platform journalism. Do you have some examples that you really like to share with people when you are talking about multi-platform journalism?
In the region where I, a lot of media organizations are doing a good job in the, let's say, globally, but also locally, there are media outlets who are doing a great job. There are few of them who are doing a really great job. One of the best examples here in the region that I often like to share is Kosovo 2.0. It's a young and dedicated media outlet from Kosovo that has really embraced this multi-platform approach, especially over the last year. And you can see clearly with the numbers on each page, you can see clearly the audience growing because they adapt stories carefully and planning, as pre-planning, as we talked before, for each platform, while keeping a consistent visual and editorial identity of the whole media brand. For example, there was a long form story about how prepared is the state for the for firefighting. The story was planned as a full multimedia story. The main channel was the website, where you can see a multimedia package of the story. But what is important is that the story had its own visual style, its own colors, graphics, and that visual style was carried across all platforms, creating a clear brand identity around the story. On Instagram, for example, Kosovo 2.0 with this story used design carousels to highlight these key facts from the story. Short real videos that grab the attention quickly and bring the story to life in just, let's say, 60 seconds. But for those who wanted more details, for example, the story extends in a longer video on YouTube. On the newsletter version, you have a summarization of the key points of that story with direct links of all the content that was created inside of the story. And this is guiding readers to explore the story however they prefer. And just to make a point, this is the most important thing, is to plan ahead and to see the story as a whole from the start, and not to do something and not to add something later, because it's going to be shown that you added this later or you thought of this later. Yeah, it's not a bad thing to do it afterwards if you think of something, a quiz or a Q&A or something like that, because you think that the story is relevant. But when you pre-plan, all parts of the story work together, well together, and fit each platform in the right way. So using the same look and the same style, the same branding everywhere helps also people recognize and trust the story no matter where they see it.
What about those newsrooms who only have their product, let's say, on TikTok or just on Instagram? Because that also can happen now. There are lots of small magazines that only have Instagram or only have a TikTok. Do you think that they also should move to different platforms? Or is it enough because they're already in this sweet place and they have TikTok and lots of people are following them?
If small media outlets, I know a lot of small media outlets, not just here in the region, who focus on a single platform, but it's a trendy platform like Instagram or TikTok, and they have a quite nice big audience that even some traditional media don't have, because they adapted too slow or didn't adapt at all. So a single depends. You can exist on a single platform, but you have to understand which platform it is. For example, if you are only on the website, or only on you're doing on a television or something like that. I'm saying this, but in today's media context, nobody's on one platform. They are all on different platforms, but here we ask the question how they use this platform. As I already told you, everybody is on Facebook, but they are not producing any Facebook-style content that is recognized by the public there. On Instagram and on TikTok, those media outlets that are there know how to produce content for Instagram and TikTok. And that's why they have a big audience. So let me get to the answer of your question. There is a possibility to live on a single platform, but it's getting smaller day by day. If you are doing something really well on one platform, like a podcast, and you have a loyal audience, you can still make an impact. And in some countries, for example, there are niche media outlets. They do basically investigative journalism, data-driven journalism and stuff like that. You might survive thanks to the support of donations of small, dedicated group of people. And that model can work, but it's not the reality for most media outlets, especially in the Western Balkan region. So the truth is that the media that learn to change and adapt to the new platforms and new habits can still, and new technologies are the ones more likely to survive the next big change. So we have to prepare also for the next big change. We don't know what it is, whether it's an algorithm shift or some new dominant platform or something we haven't seen yet. That doesn't mean that every journalist has to be everywhere. It does mean that understanding how to tell your story in more than one way, for example, I mentioned the podcast, maybe turning a podcast into a short video teaser or a carousel with sharing the key quotes in a visual post. This is how to reach more people on different platforms, and this is how you prolong the life of your podcast, even if it's a single podcast.
We are slowly finishing our podcast. I just have a couple of more questions to wrap it up. Let's talk about also AI in this whole multi-platform journalism study. Like, what about the role of it? And because AI can be very useful in this sense. It can be very useful, especially for small newsrooms that they don't have that many people on board. What do you think? What's the role of AI in multi-platform journalism?
Well, just before I answer your question, the last place where I worked for, where I was an editor-in-chief, the day a ChatGPT was introduced, when I tested it while I was working, while I was at my job, that is the day I decided to quit my job, because I understand that this is the new game-changing technology, not just in journalism, but everywhere. And I needed time to understand it. That's not the day when I quit my job, but that's the day when I decided to quit my job. A lot of my colleagues are afraid from AI. They think that AI is going to replace them. We don't need to be afraid, I think. AI is really good when talking about multi-platform journalism. I think that AI tools are really good at transforming content from one platform to another, which can save journalists and editors a lot of time. But AI can't replace the core of journalism, telling human-centered stories, being out in the field, and connecting with real people. That cannot be replaced. It is similar to what happened when I was teaching, and I'm still teaching mobile journalism, and when I visit different news media outlets, many media workers are worried that teaching journalists how to edit film, edit videos by themselves with a mobile phone would replace other professionals like professional video editors, professional camera men, and still, etc. But that's not true. Let's say 15 years ago, when mobile journalism was introduced in larger news media companies like the BBC, RTE in Ireland, etc., etc. So it empowered journalists to tell the stories by themselves, and they were not dependent on other people in the news media outlets. But also, these professional video editors and cameramen could still focus on more demanding work, like documentaries, visually more engaging stories, etc., etc. But journalists can handle simple tasks to speed up the process. So, going back to the AI, with AI, we will see a similar split. We'll see media workers who learn how to use and understand AI tools, and those people will have an advantage. And on the other side would be those who are opposing AI technology. Because even with the social media, when social media emerged, a lot of, media workers said that it's going to destroy journalism, etc., etc. Yeah, it changed the journalism in some mindset. You could say that it destroyed some type of journalism, but journalism is still exists. We still tell stories. We still focus on people, etc., etc. So I think that it would be similar with AI, not opposing to AI, understanding AI, and ethically implementing AI inside every newsroom will only help us, because ChatGPT is not the only AI, not the first AI that media workers were using. Big media companies were using AI technology even before ChatGPT emerged. So we have to understand that the changes now are happening much faster than the changes with mobile phones and with social media networks. So AI is a tool. We have to understand that AI is a tool to help us be more efficient and creative, not a replacement to the human side of storytelling.
What do you think? What kind of training, or maybe even rather a mindset shift, do you think journalists need to stay ahead in this space?
Not just in multi-platform journalism, it is say to every media worker to stay ahead in every kind of journalism, let's say multi-platform journalism. The most important mindset is being a constant learner. I've been a journalist for over 20 years, and even though in the last six years I focused more on training and mentoring other journalists, not just younger, even much experienced journalists than me, with this how to use these new technologies, I'm still learning every day by myself. I'm still applying to trainings here and abroad to see new trends and new stuff. Whether there is a new opportunity to learn something exciting, I jump in. So many of these new tools and trends aren't part of the formal education. We have to understand, especially in the region where we live in. Even in more developed countries, formalization of new trends into the journalism school is very slow. So everything comes from informal learning, experimentation. So if there is a new AI tool, I will try it. Test it for 1 week, 2 weeks, and then decide whether I'm going to use it or not. So we have to adapt on the go, while the changes happen. So journalists need to be flexible and open to trying new things, even if it feels challenging or overwhelming at first. But it's not only on journalists themselves, unfortunately. Managers and chief editors need also to understand how these changes happen, why these changes happen, and how they're going to implement these changes in order to support their teams, to support the journalism staff, to support the content creators. Because without a leadership that values continuous learning and innovation, it's hard for newsrooms, for media organizations to keep up. So overall, I would say it's about building a culture where this learning never stops.
All right. Alexander, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing these insights.
Thank you for inviting me, and it was a pleasure talking to you again.
To everyone listening, thanks for tuning in to Fixed. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast, follow The Fix online, and yes, we're now also on TikTok. Want to support our work? Visit thefix.media and explore our new membership program.